Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, hosted on JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. My name is Greg Mahochko, and joining me, the other member of the firm, is Haas Reuter. Haas, good to talk with you again, sir.
As always, good to be talking with you as well. We're in game week.
Game week, it's hard to believe it's finally here, but everybody's been ready for this game week since the end of November, so, you know, all we have is really, if you're listening to this on Monday, you have you have less than a week until Husker football. I mean, everybody counts it different, depends on if you count Monday or don't count Monday, so less than a week until Husker football returns, and we have just two editions of the cross-examination left. Of course, we all know we're saving our fearless leader, John Johnston, till later in the week, just to get you properly amped up for kickoff. But we're joined this time around by Andy Ketterson. Andy has been with Coronation for, longer than I've been there, and so that makes him one of the elder statesmen. Andy, welcome to the show. Your first time ever using Skype and your first appearance, your debut on the Five Heart Podcast. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to it, and looking forward to downloading Skype as well.
And if I remember what, you know, we talk, of course, everybody's part of the Coronation Slack chat room. So you just put a daughter into college, so you're going to be using Skype to talk with your daughter frequently, correct?
Yeah, possibly. The good news is I only put her in college out in Fremont, so she's only about 30 or 40 minutes away, and believe me, she knows how to text message, so she stays in touch. She's already sent me a few messages out there. She seems to be having fun with it.
Well, that's excellent, excellent. We are going to kind of dive right into the cross-examination, find out a little bit about you, and then we've got some Husker news and notes. And, you know, some press conference talk and some happenings from the weekend. So excited to dive into all of it. Our very first question, Andy, is, are you a Nebraska native?
I am not. I moved here in 1977 when I was in eighth grade, and I lived four places before that. I was born in Florida, left there when I was two, so I have zero memories of Florida, and God knows nothing but hatred for the Florida Gators and the Seminoles, especially the Hurricanes. After I'd been here about 20, 25 years, I think at that point people finally started, you know, giving me sort of semi-native status.
I was wondering if, you know, after a certain amount of time being any place, if you're, you know, maybe even if you're not born there, but if they, you know, start to accept you. I don't know if I've ever been in any one place long enough to be accepted, but I, like I said, after 20 or so years, they started to treat you like one of their own.
Exactly. Once I'd lived here three times as long as the other four places combined, I think it was okay. I get to wear my Nebraska hat and not be called a faker.
What was the moment that made you a Nebraska fan, Andy?
You know, I went to Nebraska. I went to high school here for 4 years. I was still pretty much a Georgia fan through those years. And even after my freshman year in college, probably, I was falling in love a little, but it was still more Georgia. And I think the moment that probably did it for it, that really started sending me down that river, was in my freshman year when we played Penn State, and that was the out of bounds play with, you know, I can't even remember the receiver's name, but it was a Hostetler or somebody like it. I can't even remember the quarterback. I mean, this is how old I am, and most Nebraska fans will just, you know, my age will spit that out right away with venom in their voice. But I do remember just being as ready as everybody else to start flipping some furniture around the room. And yeah, by the time I was around, at that point, I admit, you know, you're George, you're 1A or number two now.
All right. That, oh, man. Was it, it was Blackledge.
Blackledge.
That was, I know, because I'm a Chiefs fan, unfortunately.
Yep.
We all have our cross to bear.
That was him.
Greg, you got that list of questions? I misplaced.
I do have that list of questions. And I'm gonna send it to you.
Committed to memory.
I'm gonna send it to you right now. So Andy, yeah. we as part of the getting to know you process, Andy, we always like to ask, you know, something. And you know, if you are a spy or something like that, you can obviously pass on this question. But what is your day job?
I'm a first mortgage underwriter for Pentagon Federal Credit. At least that's what the CIA told me to say.
Nice cover. It really helps to you know, have that little CIA card you can pull out, be like, this is the witness protection program I'm in.
More boring one.
Yeah. So you got to Nebraska in eighth grade, took a few years, the conversion finally happened. In that time that you've been, you know, a Husker fan, do you have an all-time favorite Husker?
Just one all-time favorite player?
I mean, we get a few. We, you know, some of our cohorts over at Coronation have listed. You know, it's tough to narrow down to just one. So if you've got more than one, you know, certainly you can fire off as many names as you feel comfortable.
Okay, I'd say there's a few. Broderick Thomas was probably one of the guys I first just really enjoyed when I was actually down there and in college, because he was such a change from what the typical Nebraska fan liked out of their player. You know, they liked the guy that walked into the end zone, handed the ball to the ref, didn't celebrate at all. And here was the guy, you know, with the keys to our house, talk before Oklahoma, and never shy about the play on the field. And with him, you know, it wasn't really a taunting thing. I just got the feeling he just genuinely loved to play the games. So I always enjoy watching him quite a bit, and because he backed it up again and again. You know, you start going through the 90s. Well, couple other guys in the 80s. I had a lot of fun watching Rod Smith and Brian Davis, because we actually, they were part of a group where we played a lot of pool down at the Sandys together, and they were good guys as well as great players, so that was kind of fun. When he got in the 90s, gosh, yeah, there were just so many to like in that team. Like the Tommy Frazier's leadership always stuck with me. Back-wise, I never felt like we had guys that just stood out and dominated. I get a lot of crap for this, but I love Eric Crocker back, and I like to bring up the notion every now and again that, you know, we might have lost even fewer than the two or three games we did lose if he was a quarterback in, say, 94, 95. And I'm just flat out one of the toughest players we ever had at Nebraska. And that's saying something. But the abuse, you know, kind of being a 20-25 carry running back under center, it just amazed me sometimes that he could keep getting back up. But there, that's my way too long short answer. I could go on first on trying to pick favorite Huskers.
No, it's a tough question, because there's so many. You know, like there are some guys who just, you know, maybe weren't the best player, but you just like the way they played, like Jack Gangwish a few years ago in the 2015 team. he just brought it every day, even though he wasn't the most talented guy. And you just got to respect the hell out of that.
Yeah, and that, then you're, you know, we don't, didn't even get to say Burkhead or Janovich or guys like that. But, you know, one guy who was a star, another guy who, you know, the homegrown guy that just did ass and ran people over all night long.
Oh, yeah. Those guys become folk heroes. All right. Do you have a favorite Nebraska, you know, it could be football game, basketball, baseball, volleyball, just Husker sports moment in general?
That is the that's the easiest one. Jill did like a little like interview a few like a couple years ago, and that's the game that pops to mind is I believe it's the 92 Colorado game where, you know, we'd just been putting up with several years of Colorado finding ways to beat us late, doing it with their mouths running the whole time, you know, Bill McCartney's pious nonsense. And can you tell how much I hated them? And then I think what the final score of that game was something like 52-7. We just ran all over them. They and when we got there a little late and we're kind of under where the ambulance was, and Colorado was back on that side of the field with their backs to us. Just had so much fun watching Coy Detmer run for his life. Tricks on me, but I swear to God, there was one where he got the snap. We were through the line before he took two steps, and he just turned with his head facing us and threw it back over his head so they wouldn't hit him again. That sticks out in that game is the one where I think it was Dion Figures for Colorado. Frazier does a keeper left, comes upfield, probably 5-10 yards, something like that. Figures just puts a murderous hit on him, knocks Frazier flat on his ass. He right to his feet, and he's face to face with Figures, just letting him have it. And they're just face mask to face mask, jawing at each other, and the crowd's going crazy because that was the first moment when Colorado had gotten on our roll. You know, and we'd just been getting pounded by Miami, getting beaten by them, and the way I saw it was Nebraska announcing to the college football world, we're not taking anybody's crap anymore. So that, yeah, in any sport, any game, that's been my favorite one to be a part of. And I thought there was going to be a murder after that game because the fan, you know, the normally nice Nebraska fans stormed the field, actually formed like a human tunnel that Colorado had to walk through on the field to go back to their locker room. And are just screaming at him, letting him have it. And I actually wanted to thank Colorado for not starting what would have been like one of the ugliest moments in history in Lincoln. Because we were watching that going, this might not end well, but Colorado just kept their heads down and headed to the locker room. So the beautiful story doesn't end with somebody, you know, going to jail or getting killed on the field.
Yeah, I watched that game in its entirety on YouTube just about 6 weeks ago, and that might be the angriest I've ever seen Memorial Stadium. It was beautiful.
It really was, and we really were.
I was at the infamous Black Friday game in 2015 against Iowa when Armstrong had the Black Friday special, 4 interceptions with the doorbuster pick 6, if you guys recall. And yes. Was one angry crowd before kickoff. I mean, we were... People were merciless towards the Iowa fans. Shitty weather, and I was thinking if we pull this thing off today, this is going to be one of the, you know, one of my favorite games ever. And yeah, the 4 interceptions happen, and I just freeze my ass off outside for 4 hours. So, did not end up with a happy ending.
Not at all.
So we usually ask a question that I don't know, because we're within a week of the season, I'm hesitant to ask it. Haas, the coach's question, should we
allow that? Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. So here we go.
Okay. Now I'm scared.
No. I think this is an opportunity for you to either rant or lift up a coach who I'll just ask the question. And
okay.
So, you know, between Osborne and now Scott Frost, there have been 4 head coaches at University of Nebraska, all of which have been fired. Frank Solich, Bill Callahan, Bo Pelini, Mike Riley. Of those four, which do you most wish would have been successful?
That's a tough one. Obviously not Callahan or Riley. I could go either way. I don't think Frank was destined to be successful. But I wish he's one where I thought he was a nice enough guy. I wish he would have been. Bo, if people don't remember, it wasn't this strong because he wasn't, a former Nebraska quarterback. But what's going on with this staff is it's just a much stronger version of what happened when Bo was hired, because they loved him as a coach here. Fiery, the defense has played well. Then he went down, LSU's defense won, they won a national championship in LSU with him as the defensive coordinator. And it just seemed like, Osborne liked him. He picked him over Turner Gill, for crying out loud. And I really think that if he could have found some success, and that would have started with a little, peace in his own heart or something. I really think that could have been a love affair for years and years to come. It just wasn't meant to be. But that could have been fun. But the thing is, now that we've got Frost coming in, they say everything happens for a reason, and maybe all the dominoes have fallen, for this moment. Or at least that's what I'm choosing to believe, and I'm sticking. But yeah, it would be one of those. It would be one of those two. It would have been Solich or Pelini.
When you look at what Alabama went through from the time Bear Bryant retired until they hired Saban, like else between Alabama and Nebraska over the course of time are pretty pretty stark. Similar. It's just it feels good. There's no political infighting within the fan base anymore. No one's wanting their narrative to be right. And I was just going to add, maintain the status quo, what he had already
said. I always felt that much like Callahan, he kind of hung himself out to dry with the defensive coordinator that just wasn't up to the task. And he hired him right at the point where he jumped over and wanting to get more involved in the offense with Beck, when Papuchas, to me, was a guy who just – he had that same kind of wide-eyed look that Frank would get on the sideline at the wrong time. Carroll at Southern High seemed like he's wide-eyed. And here was Bo going to help a guy who'd had it, maybe it was more Mangino, not with a pretty good track record from Kansas, and he really needed to be weathered a lot closer, or just hiring a guy with experience to do the job. And I just thought that handcuffed him.
He should have gone out and hired a top flight DC when Carl left for the Florida Atlantic job.
Yeah, people forget Carl was like in that whole section of those four coaches there. I think Carl was like easily the best defensive coordinator in that era, and second place isn't that close. For as much fun as we like to have with Carl,
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, it's like who else, for the couple of years, Frank, but that counts more towards Osborne than who else? Craig Bowl, Kevin Cosgrove, Mark Banker, than our good friend Bob Diaco.
Oh, good God.
There's no reasonable reason, Bob Diaco.
Yeah. I'm starting fake trophy games with a guy who's not interested in Bob Diaco.
Oh, I read that article the other night, and I had forgotten about just how gold that was. Oh, my God. And he paid for it himself. That's the greatest part of it.
And then it disappeared off the field.
Frost had zero interest in it.
Yeah, Central Florida just left it sitting there, and apparently Connecticut didn't feel like they should take it back. So it was it just got left on the field, and then no one ever figured out who finally took it, which was a perfect ending to that.
Start scouring eBay for that thing, getting it up rock.
Because who would sell that if they didn't really own it?
What do you got next, Greg?
I think the final question in the cross-examination is another easy one, lobbing up a softball, and that's just, Andy, how did you come to write for Coronation?
That was actually kind of a funny story. Like, Barking Carnival is the Texas site now on SB Nation, but... geez, this is like many years back. God, I'm trying to think how many years ago this has to be now. Maybe, you know, 8 or 9. But whenever they had their own thing going, and they decided they wanted to start getting some other schools involved, and they set it up and everything. And before the now I can remember the year. It was before the Big 12 title game against Texas, the Indomitian Sioux 1 second left field goal game. I did a prediction. Whenever they talked about Nebraska, I'd jump in on their comments board, and I was not obnoxious enough to where they'd respond to me, and we'd go back and forth a little and have fun with it. And I did this really long prediction, and I'd be and a thing that, like, you know, Texas has been on an offer, can sue so much havoc on that he'll have something like 11 sacks. Nebraska won't move anywhere with Zach Lee. And I think I predicted the final score of the game to be like 12-11 or something. And it was 13, you know, then it's 13-12, and Sue has like 7 or 8 sacks or whatever. So then I got an email like a few days later saying, hey, Nebraska addiction, have you ever done this? Would you be interested in writing? And they called, God, what was it? They called it Better Off Red, was the Nebraska site. And then one day, I think a year or two that I did that. And then we got this email from John saying that they, like, it was kind of from John and the guys from Texas at the same time, talking about how they were getting out of that, and we were going to, we're going to be part of this Corn Nation thing. And I remember one of the other guys said something, okay, I'm not really sure I understand all of the legal mumbo jumbo here, but it doesn't matter because we're not getting paid anyway. But are you trading us to Corn Nation? Is that what I'm seeing? And it jumped in like the summer before and been doing it ever since. I think the first thing we did, it was like we were joining the Big Ten and or something like that. And we did like a little hunting like the county, only we found a different Nebraska Big Ten.
So you've been part of the team for...
Anybody there?
Yeah. So you've been part of the team for a good several years now. And of course, staff changes, are made regularly. People come in and out. And we just learned earlier, a couple weeks back or whatever, that Ty, our volleyball guru, is going to be leaving at the end of this season. What is your favorite part about, your contributions to Corn Nation?
For me, I could sit there and wallow around in stats and depth charts and home and away records and all that. But what John's really given me the freedom to do is just go off and have fun with some of the humorous stuff. For example, when right after we hired Frost, I don't know why I got the idea to compare the Huskers to the Karate Kid and assign people different. If the Huskers were the Karate Kid movie, here's who'd play who. And one thing I used to do each year, I kind of got away from it, where I was only probably maybe doing 2 or 3 pieces a year there for a few years, as I had both my kids in hockey and I was coaching a lot and on the road a bunch. And I'm kind of getting back in with both feet now for the past few months, and I intend to keep them there this time. But, just stuff like, one thing I did every year was pick a funny movie out, pick a bunch of dumb quotes, and then compare, and then find for each game of the previous season, do a season and a review with each quote. This year, because of the last season, I went to a much darker place with The Walking Dead. It wasn't, there weren't a lot of humorous quotes, but it was a really good venting session. I had a couple people in the comments go, why in hell would you bring this back up? But for some other people, I was, it was like, they were saying, God, I was glad to just kind of unleash again. That really made me feel good just to let some of that rage out. And I actually got a couple of emails from people, and that had never happened before, going, hey, great article. But that's the thing is like anybody can be the World Herald and give you a game recap and, you know, throw your average per carry and why he should be playing and he shouldn't. And John gives me the leash to just go out there and complete idiot and asshole and try to make people laugh at times, and I enjoy that.
And that, you know, especially last year, and, you know, you can pick and choose, you know, some seasons out of the last 10 or 15 years. We need to find those reasons to laugh. It's cathartic in a lot of ways. So what you do and bringing that humor element, I think a lot of people really appreciate it. So I tip my cap to you, sir.
No, I appreciate it, but the secret to me is if I can make myself giggle, then hopefully a few other people will laugh too. I've thrown away articles where I'm like, I'm writing it seems funny, and I'm just not laughing. And I'm like, well, if I can't even find it funny myself, I really doubt anybody else will.
Let's turn the page then and focus on some of the news and information that we learned over the weekend. As we're recording this, it's Sunday night, so we've had, you know, a weekend of press conferences, and, you know, we're turning the page now. It's game week, so we've learned a lot of things in the last few days. I don't know, there are probably different schools of thought. I think one of the biggest things that we learned outside of the quarterback race and who was named the starter was we learned that Trey Bryant had to retire from football because of the condition of his knees. And he wrote a really eloquent statement that he released, I guess, through, you know, Twitter or social media, saying that he was unable to perform at the level that he was used to. And so because of that, he had to retire.
Yeah, Trey Bryant's retirement, it's disappointing. I mean, not disappointing. Like, I'm not pissed that he's retiring because he has bad knees. But he was such an explosive player those first couple of games in 2017 against Arkansas State and Oregon. And you saw it in flashes of it in 16 as well, like that touchdown catch and run he had on fourth down against Minnesota. And it just sucks to see a guy with that talent have to hang up the cleats, you know, prematurely.
I was going to say, the thing that irritated me the most about it, I didn't think that he was necessarily separated that far from, say, Wilbon and Ozigbo. I thought he got to carry the ball a lot against the two worst defenses we played last year. But to me, that was the big problem. And I had my problem there is with Mike Riley. It's like, I don't hate him as a person, but it really irritates me when you take a guy with chronic knee problems and have him carry it. I think it was something like 51 times in just over six quarters when you've got two other guys who, and coming out of the last practices, it sounded like he was going to roll with three guys. And if you've got a guy with Bryant's knees, why wouldn't you do that? Maybe it happens anyway. But, you know, maybe the knees go bad anyway, but putting that kind of a load on him really seemed to accelerate things. And I'm still a little ticked off about that. You hate to see a kid like have to cut out early because of injuries.
I agree 100%. And I'm ticked off, too, about how Riley managed that, because that's just, I mean, there's really no other term for it, but it's almost, you know, abusive. In a way, just to, you know, saddle that many carries on a guy when you know he's got a knee problem. He missed a lot of practice in the fall camp in 2017. I'm going to sound like Bob Diaco here, and I'm not defending Riley's, you know, decision, but the only reasonable reason that I could think of is they knew that, you know, the offense is going to be hard pressed to do anything in the run game. So they figured, hey, get everything you can out of him right now before that knee goes bad, which, if that's the line of thinking, then all those guys should have been drummed out of the business.
Hey, guess what? They were, or at least out of our
league. Yeah. Mike Riley's the what league is that? That he's coaching San Antonio, and
isn't it some arena league?
Yeah, I think it's arena or like USFHL. Other letters. No,
a lot of letters.
Yeah, a lot of letters. Not a lot of fans.
And you wonder about that, because what makes you good? Go from getting a ticket back home to, you know, what was he going to be, the quarterback's coach there? And it just, I mean, I was just picturing like a Barney Cotton role for him, where he's just going to hang out in the office, fetch the occasional pepper jacks for everybody, you know, collect a nice six-figure salary, and then Because I just saw an article saying, he's gone to some arena or half-ass league job. And I'm like, what do you do that for? And I really wonder what kind of story's behind that. Something tells me he didn't decide, gosh, I've really been meaning to jump into this little whatever the hell they're doing kind of type of thing.
Yeah, especially going from, even though it's Oregon State, but major college football to some startup league that probably isn't going to exist 18 months from now.
Well, he could have gone to the XFL. You don't know.
Yeah, that's where Purdue's coach Jeff Brohm did a little quarterbacking.
That's right.
They're coming back.
He hates me.
Vince is bringing it back, everybody. Watch out. So we learned that, and I thought it was really well done statement by Trey. And you know, the fact that he said, I can't perform up to the level and standard that I've set for myself. And he's got to think long-term as well. You know, I'm sure as his life goes on, he wants to have kids and then grandkids and want to be able to, just be have that normal life. So I totally get it. But what you guys said, you're right, it does suck because not only is it, a young man who's taken out of the game he loves, too soon, but when you look at it through the scope of, like Andy said, the kind of overworked, knees for somebody who didn't practice as much. When you have, Mikael Wilbon and Divine Ozigbo on the bench as well, it's not something I ever thought about. But yeah, it makes sense. And to jump on that bandwagon with you guys kind of ticks me off a little bit. So the other news that we got, and maybe I shouldn't say other isn't the only other news that we got, but we did learn. What's that?
I totally cut you off and ruined it. I'm sorry.
What'd you say? I missed it.
I was just going to say, we got ourselves our quarterback.
We got ourselves our quarterback. Take it away, Hoss.
Adrian A. Magic Martinez. I can't even say that. Let's just hope he doesn't specialize in arm punts.
do you think he'll like playing against away games?
Oh, God, I hope so. Taylor Martinez brought me a lot of entertainment, a lot of big plays, and also aged me by about 7 years over the course of his career.
So let's talk about Martinez because, we've touched on it here and there over the summer as the uncertainty continued. Martinez has not played, he got, some action in the spring game, but, that's a scrimmage and there's no contact. But he hasn't been tackled since, 2016? Because he missed all of his senior year, so
2016.
That's right, green jersey.
So that I guess that goes to show his potential. But what does that mean for like a Tristan? I can never remember Gebbia. What does that mean for
Gebbia?
Thank you. Do you think it was that close? Do you think it was that close of a quarterback battle all along, or do you think that they kind of always knew, but in the Coach Frost fashion, they kind of played it close to the chest?
I think it was that close the entire time just because they both bring something. They both bring good things to the table as the point guard distributor in this offense. With Gebbia with his, passing ability and quick decision making and, his athleticism that a lot of people don't give him credit for. Then Martinez is just such a fluid runner and his passing ability is better than people give him credit for. Again, just that, torn labrum in his throwing shoulder kind of gave people some reservations about his ability to throw the ball. But I think it was close, but at the end of the day, it's the guy that Frost identified almost 2 years ago as being a perfect fit for his offense, got him in, to the program. And, they're both freshmen in terms of eligibility, Gebbia being a redshirt freshman, of course, but all things being equal, you go with the guy that you feel is most likely to carry out your scheme.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head with as the quarterback who's been identified for the offense. But I just got done doing Jill's roundtable on the depth chart, and I said I would have been surprised if Jebby had gotten it. I thought I very much believe it was close. I don't think it was handed to anybody, but at the end of the day, there were just two things that rang out for me. One, if they're both freshmen and this is the guy you've identified is the fit, then why are you going to give all the experience in the first year to the other guy? And secondly, I thought he just was much more the electric player and move the offense better than Jebbia did in the spring game. Jebbia may make better decisions, but I believe Martinez is one of those guys that can, I think I said in the article, can turn mistakes into 20-yard gains. And Jebbia is much more mobile than they give him credit for. What, his senior year, he ran for something like 300-500 yards. So he can move around, but Martinez, I think, just has that it factor.
Yeah, and his running ability being, and not discrediting Jebbia's obviously, but Martinez's running ability is much more dynamic. Like, give a guy like Jebbia a crease, he's going to pick up a first down. Defense gives a guy like Martinez a crease, they're probably giving up a score.
Right. And they did, a couple of them, I think.
Yeah. And so there's no time like the present, and get it, you know, if he's the guy that we're rolling with, get him the experience, get him out there.
So let me
take a lump or two and let's go.
Let me ask you both this question then, because this was honestly, in my opinion, the first offseason that we've had a quarterback battle for some time. It seemed like, you know, after Taylor Martinez was crowned, you know, then we went straight to Tommy Armstrong. And even a year ago when it was Tanner Lee or POB, I think most people kind of had a feeling that it was going to be Tanner Lee, you know, named the starter. So in the off season, I guess, I don't know, stress factor or however you want to phrase it, would you rather have an off season with a known, you know, let's say, especially in a situation like this where you have two unknowns, would you have rather known, you know, now when we found out, you know, in the you know, days or week leading up to the first game, or would you have rather that announcement come back in spring?
Well, leading up to the first game.
In this particular case, I wanted it leading up to the first week because there's one guy you're only going to get a few weeks look at, as opposed to, you know, check that. Frost is getting his first real look at both of them, and if I'm him, I want to have as long of a look as I can, both the spring and the fall camp. Now, of course, my ideal is for you already have your starter coming back and not even have to worry about it, but that wasn't in the cards this time.
And I think, I was going to say, no offense to Tanner Lee, but I think we're all a little happy that wasn't in the cards this time. So,
oh God, I'm glad he left early.
Yeah, I'm pretty well known as a staunch Tanner Lee defender, but going back through last season as a post-mortem over the summer, watching games that I DVR'd, it was evident that, you know, he might have been a workout warrior. He could really spin it in practice, but he just wasn't. He's just not a good quarterback. And that, you know, he's got all the tools to be successful, but, you know.
Let me ask you guys something. Let me ask you a question real quick. tell me if this story is true. Somebody said they read it. I never did. There was a rumor that when he was at the combine or something, that Jerry Jones was watching, and when it was his turn to throw, said, "Oh, hey guys, here comes the turnover king."
Yep, that is true.
Oh my God! Okay,
and he promptly threw an interception right after Jerry Jones said that.
Oh my God!
Oh, uncanny.
Poor guy.
But I'm happy that it led up to the first game, just from the standpoint of, you know, if you name Martinez a starter, the starter back in at the end of spring ball, you give Tristan Jebbia an opportunity to transfer out.
Bingo.
Might be a little underhanded, but leading up till after classes start, you ensure that you have your backup quarterback, you know, who also partook in the quarterback race.
I have a thinking on that goes both ways, because on the one hand, maybe it's a little underhanded that you know the guy's going to be your backup, but you don't tell him, so you want to keep him from transferring. But on the other hand, the guy committed to your program, not committed to your program. Unless you don't give me the starting job, then I'm going to leave. So I don't feel that bad about it.
So many guys transfer out, commit to coaches, not programs, and you know,
right?
And nature of the beast of college football.
So let's move on, because the depth chart was also released, so we have kind of an idea. Haas, I want to this is your time to shine. It's O-line time.
All right.
So we have, I'm going to go down the offensive line here. We have Brendan Hymus, left tackle, Gerald Foster, left guard, Cole Conrad. Then we have Tanner Farmer at right guard and Matt Farniok at the right tackle. Any surprises in that mix that jumped out to you, or is that pretty well the unit that you saw, you know, way back when?
That's pretty much what I figured it would, the starting five would be. I was leaning, and this is just my own opinion, Cole Conrad's body of work at center last season before being replaced by Michael Decker. Cole Conrad being at the center position, I have some trepidation about, just from the standpoint of we've seen, I'm trying to say this in the nicest way possible. we've just seen, you know, that he hasn't exactly gotten the job done at various points in his career. But I'm going to attribute a lot of that to a lack of strength and conditioning under the previous staff, as well as some pretty poor technical coaching from Mike Cavanaugh. And so if they've identified him as being the best option we got at center, I'm hopeful that the strength and conditioning, you know, under Zach Duvall and Greg Austin's on-field coaching is going to, you know, turn him into a serviceable player. That being said, I was kind of hopeful that Tanner Farmer would slide over and be the starting center, and we'd finally get Bo Wilson into the starting lineup at right guard.
When you look at, I mean, this is going to be, or should be, one of the stronger parts of the team, because there's a lot of experience there, and with what, you know, Greg Austin should have been able to do, as we've, you know, the kind of the I don't know, the theme or narrative, you can, you know, pick whatever word you like, is that this coaching staff has taken the same clay that was left behind by Riley and his staff and are molding it better, getting more out of it. So when you take a Greg Austin and the tools that he has at his disposal, I mean, this should be really one of the stronger aspects of the team, correct?
Yeah. When you look at the depth and experience we have at it's offensive guard with Gerald Foster and Tanner Farmer starting the better parts of the previous three seasons, or two seasons going into their third. And then a guy like Bo Wilson, who in some situational duty is a short yardage H-back, has shown some good ability. And Brendan Hymus showed a lot of promise last year, despite being a 260-pound true freshman. He more than held his own in the Big Ten. And Matt Farniok was showing some flashes of potential before his injuries last year. There's some good, encouraging, you know, depth on the offensive line. Depth at the offensive tackle positions, specifically left tackle, worries me a little bit. Brendan Hymus goes down. You know, Christian Gaylord, a pretty unproven commodity, despite entering into his fifth year inside the program. You just don't really know what you have there. On the right side, you got Matt Sichterman, who is a good prospect coming out of Ohio, and, you know, has really done well in the weight room under Duvall, and by all accounts is, you know, showing out well in practice, but still unproven. So just pray for no injuries. You know, we can afford injuries at the interior position, but we cannot afford injuries at the offensive tackle positions, especially with how much Frost utilizes offensive tackles and pulling in the run game.
Yeah, we've got a lot of talent there. I think there's several guys that are there now that were pretty highly ranked recruits. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, nothing's a given, but if we didn't have Cavanaugh there, I got to believe some of these guys would have been all-conference and potentially all-Americans. This guy was like he should have been a defensive coordinator for Callahan, just with, I think, the damage he did just being in town for 3 years. I'm sorry if I sound a little torqued off, but that was the one guy that, when it became apparent. Remember when Mike Riley was hired and everybody was all excited? Hey, who's going to, Ed Orgeron wants to be on staff. You know, mm-hmm. Who's going to be his coordinators and all that. And it becomes apparent he's bringing his guys over from Oregon State, and you start reading about him, and your just heart starts sinking because you see that Banker's defenses have ranked from 50th to 100th, that Cavanaugh's offensive lines have led the Pac-10 in sacks for the past two or three years, and And I think, you know, what we saw last year was just kind of, well, it was a combination of Kavanaugh's inability to coach his position and then all the problems with strength and conditioning. And you just have guys who couldn't play very well and who were getting hurt all the time. And I just believe that goes in the other direction when you replace those two with Zach Duvall and Greg Austin. I'm looking for somewhat of it. Maybe they're not going to turn into all of a sudden just being, you know, the old Aaron Graham, Zach Wiegert line or anything like that. But I think we're going to see some improvement. I remember right after they started announcing that, you know, all the assistant coaches coming, and Austin was one of them, I get a text from my buddy I went to school with who's down in Dallas just going, thank God, I've forgotten what a well-blocked running play looks like.
I was almost more excited about hiring Greg Austin than the actual Scott Frost hire, you know, itself. Just
right.
You know, he's been one of the up-and-coming offensive line coaches the past few years, going back to when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles as an assistant O-line coach and 16-17 at UCF. And
I believe
I like the fact that he's got a little bit of, you know, the old Milt Tenneper, Barney Cotton, you know, because Barney did use Milt's old stuff, but not exactly taught it as well as Milt did. But the Milt Tenneper scheme and technique, coupled with the Bill Callahan scheme and technique that he played under at Nebraska, and pairing those two together, I mean, that's, you can see it on the field that he's using a blend of old Nebraska and the stuff he learned from Callahan, stuff he learned from working for the Eagles organization, and he's just a good technical coach. His O-lines are technically sound. They're in excellent physical shape, you know, from strength and conditioning. And I think the O-line could be a pleasant surprise for us this year.
Right. Now, I was just going to add that, you know, having played for Callahan, say what you will about him, but when you look at how things have played out, you know, the Dallas offensive line, what he's done there, that's probably the toughest offensive line just year in and year out in the NFL anymore.
Yeah, seems Callahan like knows steps, the line.
Yeah, it seems like everybody that steps behind that line is going for 1,600 yards.
Let's switch to the other side of the ball. I'm not going to run down the depth chart here. By the way, we did a depth chart roundtable that dropped Sunday night, so you can check that out, coordination.com. But were there any surprises? Anything that jumped out to you as far as on the defensive side of things where, you know, maybe you were surprised one way or the other with positivity or maybe disappointment with how something shook out on the defensive depth chart?
Where's Breon Dixon?
That did surprise me. And I'm hoping it's more from he's a situational pass rusher.
Right.
Because that, he showed well in the spring, but I was surprised not to find him on there.
Yeah, there's a lot of the same names that I think are just still resonating with us because of the way last season went, and we're seeing those same names out there. So I'm really hoping with the staff that the saying that Scott Frost didn't inherit 4-8 talent, he inherited a 4-8 attitude, proves true, and that there is some talent there, and they've got it whipped into shape, or at least I just want them to be competitive on that side of the ball last year. Those last three games were painful to watch, and I think, and I really do believe as much as anything, they were just quitting on their defensive coordinator, who was just, from many accounts, just a complete jackass, and, you know, both in general and to the players. So maybe having some guys there, I'm just thinking having some guys that are excited to play for that maybe have something to teach them will be responsible for, you know, a turnaround that can at least get this thing in the 20s instead of the 50s.
That's one of the things I'm really hoping for, you know, what you're saying about have a turnaround from, you know, really liking the guys they play for, you know, their coaches are able to motivate. Eric Shenander's first year at UCF had UCF ranked in the top 25 in like 9 major defensive statistical categories, and man, oh man, if that could happen this year.
I think with that offense, if that offense is cooking, people might have to come to grips with the fact that this defense is not going to be very rested a lot of the times, and that, you know, maybe get used to the occasional 52-30 score or something like that, and oh my God, well, they ran right back up and down the field and scored on us like South Florida did to Central Florida. But that just may be the scheme we're in when you run into a team with a pretty solid offense and you're going bang, bang, bang and scoring on them in a minute three, and your guys just came out off the field, they're going to be a little gas. So I really believe that, you know, I don't think it happens right away, but we better get a defense that can go too deep pretty interchangeably just to keep guys rested if that offense starts performing to that sort of level.
Yeah, especially against some of the higher octane attacks in the Big Ten. You know, Ohio State's spread to run. Wisconsin just going to run it down your throat, you know, and they're going to, you know, keep coming. Purdue, you know, with their kind of unorthodox spread. So, you know, thankfully we don't have Penn State on the schedule this year. But I was really surprised with Caleb Tanner backing up Luke Gifford at that strong side linebacker spot. And I love getting a good pass rusher experience early in his career. And if he struggles with coverage, just you got to get him out there on the field, you know, turn him loose on a quarterback. And Caleb Tanner's the kind of pass rusher we've desperately missed since Randy Gregory left Lincoln.
And I was glad to see that Trey Neal, you know, transferred in and managed to lock down a starting spot, because it's, you know, it's just nice to have a guy who will be able to quarterback that thing, you know, who's been through it for a couple of years, instead of, you know, having to come in with a new defensive set and then, okay, who's going to, you've had it for a spring and a few weeks of fall ball, who wants to take over and start, you know, kind of being the leader on that D and putting everybody where they ought to be and, you know, being that guy in the huddle. And now you've got a guy out there who's been doing it for a couple of years and hopefully can just take that role and run with it.
Yeah, that might cut down on a few alignment, you know, issues, guys being misaligned, and that could be the difference in a couple of close ball games. I remember against Iowa in 15 when Nate Gary got ejected. The very next play, Aaron Williams, when he's a freshman, missed his run fit. Kanzeri was off to the races. If it would have been a more experienced safety back there, that doesn't happen. So, yeah, getting guys aligned properly and understanding run fits and coverage, that's going to pay off at some point with Trey Neal.
Well, anything else that we need to discuss or you know, cover? That I think we've done a pretty solid outing here as far as, you know, we did the cross-examination and we've, you know, followed that up with some fantastic conversation of some news that we learned over the week, or I should say over the weekend. And like I said at the beginning of the show, we're less than a week away from Husker football, so there's a lot of reason to be excited and be happy. But did we miss anything, guys?
I'm just happy to be ready to put Akron in their place, baby.
Exactly. Let's get it started. Let's roll. Kick the tires. Light the fires.
Woo! I'm looking forward to our next episode. We're going to have another one for you before that Akron game. Of course, we're hoping to sit down with someone from HustleBelt.com, which is the Max SB Nation site, and we'll visit with somebody who covers the Akron Zips. And we'll also be in that episode joined by our fearless leader, as I mentioned, John Johnston. Whether he likes it or not, he's going to sit down with us and sit through this cross-examination. So that is all happening in the days to come. But we, again, want to extend our deepest gratitude to Andy Ketterson for joining us in his, not only is it his Skype debut, but is also his Five Heart podcast debut. So we appreciate you, Andy. And for Haas Reuter and Andy and myself, Greg Mahochko, thank you so much for listening and sharing on social media and subscribing and leaving that rate and review on your favorite podcast app. You can join us in the conversation at the number 5 Heart Podcast on Twitter, or you can write out the word 5 Heart Podcast on Facebook. And we remind you this week and every week that 5 Heart is all the heart you need.
Go Big Red.
Win the damn game.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.